All right, welcome to our Historic Preservation Commission meeting tonight. We have a few items on the agenda, and we have folks in the room as well. So we'll start with a roll call.
Sean Denniston.
Sarah Fox.
Rock Manley.
Steve Kaiser.
Former commission member.
You're making me blush.
Leah Lane.
Jen Ray with the City of Vancouver.
Sharon Lundholm with Clark County.
Jackie Camp with Clark County.
I'm Wayne Bell from Camas visiting.
Every time you're out in summers, I have property that works on the farm.
Thanks for coming. Well, welcome, everyone. Because we don't have a quorum, we won't work with our minutes tonight. We'll pull them over until either more people show up or until next week. Should we start with new business? All right. First item on the agenda is the Green Barn. Request for feedback on barn restoration and potential nomination of Chicken House. All right.
So we have Mr. Kaiser here. He was a former Historic Commission member.
A while back.
Not too long. Not too long at all. And he actually, the first time he came to visit us was as a citizen and nominating and getting his barn listed on the local register. So then we got him into our club here after that and convinced him to apply to be on commission. So,
yeah, I noticed that you have that nomination on the website as an example.
We do, yeah.
Very flattering.
Exactly.
Well, I state our relationship. I am Albert Henry the Green's great grandson, and this is my mother, Leva, and she is Albert's granddaughter.
Named after my grandmother, Leva.
And so the barn, as you know, is listed on the register. I went back and looked through the nomination, and I didn't see anything specifically about the ramps as being a contributing feature. However, in my mind, they are. And what we've seen is just in the last 18 months, the damage that you see in these photos has started to take place. And I think it's just that the original material just has outlived its useful lifespan. It's either fir beams or possibly cedar, and they're sitting on the ground at one end and sitting on a ledger and notched at the top and resting on one of the main girders on the upper end of the ramp. The ramp boards themselves, they've been in pretty bad shape for several years. And so what we'd like to do is essentially replace the planking on the deck, and we have a source for full dimensional cedar boards that would essentially match what is there existing. And then with the beams that are supporting the deck, we'd like to keep those as much as possible, but take the load off of them so that they don't continue to degrade from stress. If we can take the planks that are there off, that'll give us access to the tops of those beams, and we can do some treatment to resist decay. And then what I thought would be an appropriate approach to essentially reinforcing a structure would be to sister on the side of those existing beams, pressure-treated beams that would be. The existing beams are 6x14, and I think that we could probably, because there's six or seven beams under each ramp, and they're only 30 inches apart, we could easily take up that load by with probably 4x12 pressure-treated lumber. And we would set the tops of the, we'd attach the beams to the superstructure in exactly the same way that the original ones were done. Same thing on the other end. And the goal would be to have the tops of the new beams just be, you know, fractionally higher than the existing ones, so that the new beams would actually be taking the load. And then come back in with the deck, and with the beams that we can, it's actually the beams on the outside edge of the ramps that are in the worst shape. We'd like to then attach those to the new beams, so that the material, original material, is still there. It just won't be structural. So that was my idea, and just curious to get your feedback. And
so are they just in the dirt?
Yeah, they're just sitting on earth. Yeah.
Pretty sure of the species of the beams.
Can't be positive whether it's cedar or fir. The barn, the superstructure of the barn is fir.
So fir, so it's probably fir then.
Yeah, that's my guess.
And they're, what is the center spacing on that?
They're about 30 inches on center.
Thinking about saving that, the outside exposed beams?
To the extent that we can. I think there's only one that we couldn't, this is the one in the photograph on the lower left. It's actually decayed so much that it's collapsed and fallen onto the ground, mm-hmm. So I don't know that we could salvage that one. One idea was to, since the beams that are on the interior portion, and you can kind of see that in the upper right-hand corner, those are still in pretty reasonably good shape. And so one thing we thought we might be able to do is move those to the outside, so that in terms of the visual appearance, you'd have those two, give a more historic look.
Is this a working?
It's moving components to where they weren't actually.
Is this a working ramp? Like, would it be put back into service?
In a sense, yes. We don't keep livestock in the barn, but we do have quite a large collection of antique farm equipment that's from the farm, and we store that in there. So the goal would be that the ramps could be put into service if desired in the future.
Do you think those beams ever had any kind of finish on them, a coating of paint or anything?
I don't think so. And to be perfectly honest with you, I can't be positive that they are original.
Yeah.
It's been 115 years or something like that.
Probably not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even if they were something more rot resistant like cedar, if they weren't really maintained and sealed, they wouldn't have lasted that long.
30 years, yeah. Yeah. My gut feel, and see what other commissioners think about this is from a functionality standpoint, mm-hmm. I don't know that there's that much to be gained from both functionality and from an aesthetic and historic standpoint. I don't know if there's that much to be gained through going to extreme measures to save the bad existing beams anyway.
Okay.
And maybe in my thinking, maybe replacing the ones that are most impacted. Mm-hmm. In like form, you get, which would I suppose mean getting a 6x14 milled, mm-hmm. Because it's probably true dimension, versus a nominal?
Well, that's that. I went up today and did some. I just wanted to clarify the connections and things. And actually, they do appear to be nominal.
I'm not sure what the time frames.
And I'm not either. I am. Yeah, they're 5.5 by 13.
Well, it went in a couple of steps. So.
Yeah, so it could be 5.5 by 13.25, or it could be 5.5 by 13.5.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would tend to, you know, imply that they're not original.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think going to extreme measures to salvage the existing material is really all that important. If some of these inner ones are in pretty good shape and you can move them to the outside, I think that that's great. Mm-hmm. Now, that certainly gives you a little bit more flexibility about what you use on the inside as a mm-hmm. replacement material. Using pressure treated, I think, is fine. I think the only concern is not preservation, but structural. Pressure treated lumber doesn't have near the structural strength.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you get enough of it under there, yeah. that whatever you want to move into that barn isn't going to take your gramp
right.
out. Besides that, you know, I think any of the lumber that you keep, there are some great consolidants that you can, you know, apply by spraying or by painting that can help protect, especially that end grain, to mm-hmm. arrest the deterioration for a while. And I don't know, I can see it. So in this little picture over here, the picture where you can see where it's resting on the ground.
Yeah.
So it's actually resting on rocks.
Yeah.
And so when you've got everything apart, maybe making sure that rock pile is clear again, because it was for drainage to get the water away from
right.
the wood. Just so that, and you know, that's both historic form, but that's also that'll help your wood last longer.
Yeah.
And
no shortage of rocks.
You know, I applaud, you know, your desire to, you know, really salvage as much as possible, and I think that that's great. And there's a couple of things you can do to make sure that your replacement lasts as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There are charts out there that if you can look at the dimension and the length of your lumber, and it will give you the bearing weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know how heavy the thing that you want to move up there is, you can make sure that you have enough lumber underneath it.
Okay.
I've got that book on my shelf, but you probably don't. But you can probably find it online at this point. So.
Well, if you probably weren't aware, but I actually am an architect by profession. So.
Well, then you probably do have that book on your shelf. The Strengths of Various Wood Species. It's a great book.
Yeah.
Well, then, yeah.
It's nighttime.
Well, then you don't need me to tell you. And
I appreciate it.
Great. And, you know.
Was this coming back for a certificate of appropriateness? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great that you're trying to approach it from such a responsible standpoint.
Thank you.
But, you know, going too far, it might be more effort than is warranted.
We certainly don't want to go any further than we have to.
Yeah.
So, for the certificate of appropriateness, would we need to provide anything else?
I think
there would be anything else you guys would like to see.
I think you've described it pretty well. So if you just wrote that description,
okay.
I think that would.
It's written,
yeah.
I think, but I'll just revise it based on our discussion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that would be, that'd be fine.
Okay.
If you're bored, you could do a little sketch. You could do that quickly.
Now, Steve, did you say that we didn't really have anything mentioned in the nomination about?
You know, I didn't read it extensively.
I'll go back and look too.
But I glanced through it. I certainly didn't see any photos
of
the ramps in particular. There may be something in the text.
It'd be good to, I should definitely double check that, because we'll double check that before it comes up for the formal certificate.
Okay, now we'll move on to the chicken house.
Chicken house is an interesting story. We, in doing a little bit more research, I've been trying to find photos as early as possible, and we just have had very little luck with that. we have, and so there's and there's also not a lot of living family who have much memory of that particular use on the farm. Although there, we have a pretty extensive written family history, and there is mention of the chicken house for some time in the 20s. But that being said, we know that it at least goes back as far as 1946, because that's when Leah's parents built a house there, and the family moved in. And so we know that it's at least, going on 70 years old. And it certainly is, and it could be older. I think I need to, there's some further investigation that I think we could do to establish, particularly the siding is a tongue and groove lap siding. And so I think that we may be able to get at least closer to its actual age. But I think that the way that I kind of look at it is as a feature that's shows a continuation of the historic use of the property, and it's quite a nice little building. Also, in full disclosure, it is not in its original location. And there's a couple reasons for that. The building was originally built sitting on earth, and so it has suffered somewhat from that. Although the actual foundation beams are still in really good shape. Probably the most important reason was though that I was only partially joking when I said that we've got plenty of rock on the property, and we've had a very difficult time. I have my home on a piece of property, and about 8 years ago or something, the original house that Leah lived in, the septic system failed, and so they had to put in a new septic system. And the only place on the property they could find for a drain field was right next to the chicken house, and the reserve drain field was directly under the chicken house. And we certainly would never, want to tear down the building, but we're not sure what's going to happen in the future. And so, as it so happens, we did a project a couple of years ago where we moved the original house and did a renovation in addition to it. And so we actually had the building movers on site, Emmerd International. And they moved the building about 40 to 50 feet away from its original location. And let me see, what else can I say? That's about it, really.
And just so you guys are aware, so they've got, it's a couple properties, right?
Yeah, there's four adjacent parcels that are still left in the family from the original 700 acres.
And their green house is on the National Register and state?
I'm not sure if it's on the state or not.
And the local. National,
yeah.
And local.
So. And the barn as
and
well.
The barn's on
both as well.
Oh, yes.
And this building is located between those two on Leah's property. And so I think my take on it, that if the building was isolated in a in a new development or something, it may be questionable as to how, you know, where it plays into the, you know, the history of the community. But the fact that it's still on the original farmstead and it shows a continuation of the same use through the through the generations, and it has such a unique character to it, I think, particularly on the inside, we just thought it might be worth running up the flagpole, see if it might be qualifies for the county register.
So would this qualify as a barn?
It might be too small.
And when I've not looked at the barn registry requirement.
From state barn?
Yeah.
I looked into it recently. It says and ag structures. So maybe.
Because that might be an option as well.
Mm-hmm. And there is an application round coming up for that. I think the deadline is June 1st. And there are also grants available. Mm-hmm. So it's something to think about.
Yeah, I glanced at those requirements, and one of the first lines is a size, but probably later on there probably is a and additional outbuildings or something like that.
Holly, do you know, I know that additional outbuildings qualify. They just call it the Heritage Barn Registry as a umbrella term, but I do not know whether the other buildings are eligible for grants or whether just barns.
Okay. There's a feeling I have about your suggestion to pursue a nomination on this of, you know, you kind of have a matched set with the house, the barn,
right,
and then now the chicken coop, and the whole, the argument, you know, when I was reading online on the barn registry on, or the county site, about the legacy of Lewis, the village or city or whatever, of Lewisville, and, and I think even Wikipedia has it as a census area, so like 5.7 acres or something like that. But my gut says that something would be lost if you didn't do this.
That's funny, because I went at it a different way. I was actually looking to see what other chicken coops, you know, were famous chicken coops, you know, the history of chicken coops, and was wondering if there was some connection at all with the size of this chicken coop, or is there something else that makes it, you know, unique beyond just being an agricultural building? That's as far as I got it, kind of the there was this whole thing about the early 1900s with this chicken craze in the United States, but this seems later than that. So I thought, well, maybe this is just was actually an agricultural. Maybe they were actually producing for the area too, other than just.
I think those are excellent questions, and I haven't gotten to the point yet of doing that kind of in-depth research. Before we got some kind of feedback from you folks as to whether it was a worthy pursuit.
I think it's certainly a worthy pursuit, and I don't think that it's, from what we've seen, I don't know that it's a slam dunk to get on the registry, but if you could answer, you know, some of those questions in the affirmative, like, oh, this is a huge chicken house for the area, you know, or, you know, this is the last existing one of, it turns out there was a little mini industry, anything like that, you know, some of that historical context that can give the building itself a little bit more meaning, that could really nudge it in one direction. And that's why I asked about the barn, because, you know, I think that we have a different way of looking at barns and ag buildings and their preservation than the Clark County Registry does, and so that's another reason to think about that. And they're not mutually exclusive, so. And then I think the last thing to think about is, you know, maybe it's not just the house is one thing, and the barn is one thing, and the chicken coop is one thing. Like Rock was saying, maybe it's a set, and its significance is in being a set, and, you know, and its relationship to those other pieces, and maybe it's not a new nomination, maybe it's an amendment you know, to include this building in the existing designation. And so I think those are the things to consider. And if you can dig up, you know, some of that historical context, I think that could really make... I bet there's a compelling story there. It's just a matter of finding it and documenting it.
Figuring out what it is. I mean, I know that we might be able to speak to this more, but the Greens actually, they were kind of entrepreneurs in a sense, and they did a lot of different things. And one of the things they did was raise turkeys for Thanksgiving supper for they raise them and dress them and ship them to Portland. So, and we do have photos of Letha Green with her in a chicken yard with a bunch of chickens and geese and things like that. Unfortunately, there's no building shown there. So. But yeah, as I said, there is an extensive written history that we have, and you know, I certainly would be going through that with a fine tooth comb, and that was kind of my sense about it too. In fact, in my description, I described it as part of an ensemble of buildings, and that's really, I think, the strength in the argument is that you know, it's known that the barn and the house are the only two remaining structures from Louisville, and so I think there's something to be, you know, pursued there.
And I think do what Sarah did, you know, go see if this fits into some kind of national story, if this is a local example of something larger that was regional or national, and this becomes an example of that, you know. So definitely check that family record, but and the local records, but also look at the national records. And then make sure you write down the stuff that you've been doing and put it in that record.
Absolutely.
And you know, you mentioned it. It's an unusual, it's kind of a unique building architecturally. And it is kind of cool. I mean, that gable form is a really strong form, and that elevation with the door pulled all the way to one side is just kind of striking.
Yeah, it's really form following function. That, as you can imagine, that end of the building. And I can remember in my youth going out and collecting eggs in that chicken house. And the front end of the building is separated from the actual coop, I guess you could say. And that's where we stored the feed and tools and things like that. Yeah. And then the interior picture, I don't think, does justice to the actual layout of the. So you've got ramps on either side. One of the ramps is not attached, but it's laying on top of the deck there.
Oh, I see it there.
We've got the nesting boxes and roosting roosting areas as well. So it's. And it's got some really interesting features to it.
One place you might take a look at are plans that were distributed by the Federal Department of Agriculture. Often there were, you know, buildings built all around the country from those plans or adapted from them, and those are available online in various places. The State Department of Ag may have sent out standard plans too, for all you know. Checking with county, you know, through county extension agents, that kind of thing. So there could be something there as well.
Yeah, I get a little bit of a WPA vibe from this thing,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me if it's built off of some kind of standard.
Okay.
Standard plan.
All right. Do we have anything else on this item?
Thank you for being such good stewards of this.
It's our pleasure. We're really happy that four generations.
Oh wow.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for coming.
And I'll be in touch with you, Jackie, to talk about process.
Sounds good. Okay. Next item is capital projects at Carnegie Library.
Yeah, just a quick update on Slocum House. So Keith's done some work on that, and it's a type one. And most of it's just replacement or repair. So we're going to bring it back in May, hopefully, just for sort of a final, here's what we're doing, but it'll be, it won't, so your advisory rather than...
Is it on the inside, you said? Is it on the inside? Is that
what? Well, it's on the inside of what there's porch columns that have soaked water up from the bottom, so they're going to repair the porch columns. Some of them had already been repaired in the past. But most of the inside is it's floor refinishing, it's installing the new electrical receptacles, but they're not sinking them into the plaster, they're just installing on the exterior. And then I think we're going to replace the bathroom fixtures. They're not original to the building. Obviously, there was no indoor plumbing for that building. And I think they were probably installed in the early 60s when the building was moved, and they just leak like crazy. So they're going to leave the tub, which no one uses, and replace the toilet and the thing.
Unfortunate, but not surprising.
Yeah. And then on the Carnegie Library, we did get a $300,000 state capital appropriation for the building.
Nice.
So the two projects are new stairs out front. We did a Eric Lantialto, who was also mm-hmm. on the commission at one point, did a preliminary set of drawings for the stairs, which staff did not like. So Eric is now just talking directly to them to try to figure out something that everybody can live with.
Is that what you brought to us like last summer?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
So they're, I mean, those, if you've been to the museum, mm-hmm. so those stairs are not ADA accessible by any stretch of the imagination. And just the whole thing is completely out of code. It's got that real, you know, real narrow treads and the landing at the top that you got to turn your body sideways to get in the door. And so hopefully they will come to agreement on something that's an acceptable replacement. And then the second project is air conditioning in the building, because it has heat but no air conditioning. And it's a ductless system, but which I thought meant we didn't have to put holes in the building, but I guess that's not the case. So Nick Van at the state said both of those projects need to be reviewed by DAP. And we're actually doing a walkthrough of the building tomorrow with the contractor. So hopefully I'll have more information, and we'll be back.
Great. It's probably a good time to say I've been appointed to the Board of Trustees of the Historic Society. So if we did have to make a decision, I'd have to recuse myself.
You will have to make a decision on that one, because mm-hmm. both of those are, I mean, the steps are a character-defining feature of the building,
yeah.
even though they were noted from the time the building was opened that they were a hazard to the age of his firm. So Carnegie loved those stairs. They're in almost all of his libraries, and they're, he called them the steps to knowledge, and that people should have to struggle a little bit to get up steps to knowledge. So,
we want to remove barriers to knowledge these days.
And the air conditioning, I mean, that building's terrible in the summertime for visitors mm-hmm. and staff, and plus it's not good for the artifacts to have those extreme swings in climate in the building. So, anyway, so I'm excited that we got the money and that we're going to be able to do both these projects, which will pretty much finish all of the renovations in the building that we were trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
What time is the contractor? Can I come?
You want to?
I might.
Okay.
I took tomorrow off, so.
There you go. We're meeting at the museum at 11.
I might show up.
Okay.
We'll see what my wife says.
Next item is succession planning. Sorry.
I fixed it.
For us. So we're
succeeding from the game.
Yes, we're not succeeding. it was a former typo. Robert and I, we had a discussion just because he and I, when we started, we were the loans. Everyone else, when we were appointed, everyone else was maxed out on time, so we felt like, wow, we were just kind of, you know, what do we do, you know? So that felt kind of interesting. And we were kind of hoping that the next round, we wouldn't have that same abrupt change in leadership, which I don't think we will. We have enough staggering of terms now. But I think that's basically what he was thinking about talking about is in a couple months. I thought it was July that we usually do.
We usually meet up in June. So because the 4th of July things, we usually cancel July. So it's
so is it June that we usually do that?
I think it's August when we're doing it.
Okay, waiting until everyone gets on board.
Yeah.
So the idea was to get it in your minds that, you know, the next round coming up, Robert and I have just a year left. So, you know, think about stepping up into these roles. And I think that was it that we wanted to cover on that one. Let's see, we've got awards on May 15th at 1 p.m.
I think it might be useful if you could send a description to us of what those roles entail.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. The chair and vice chair.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Okay, so next up, awards. Award, May 15th.
Yes, so I forward you the letter that you received, so congratulations. And the ceremony is on May 15th. This is the letter here, so it gives you the information. I know that Robert said he plans to attend, as well as I think Mark said he could. I haven't heard it from the rest of you all. I know schedules can be hard, so if you can make it, great. If not, you know, understandable. It's Jaren or I will be going up to, we also have another commission meeting that night, so we'll have to figure out who's gonna go. And Councillor Bolt, who was the official submittaler, he came down and is very happy that you all received this award and would like to acknowledge you at a council meeting. So we're thinking of the week probably after this, their following Tuesday meeting, which is the 22nd. They meet at 10 a.m. So it'd be great if as many of you all could come. And get acknowledged by the county council and for all the good work you've been doing. So,
on the award ceremony in Olympia, what's the time frame? It says one, but what is the actual, you know, do you want to, I have a planning commission meeting that night too. That's so I'd have
I wouldn't
to be back.
Think it would be too long. I'll give you any details.
It usually takes about an hour and a half, but there are refreshments, so people kind of linger. But I suppose you could even ask. If this award could be given towards the early part of the ceremony, for mm-hmm. example, and that might be a way to make it work out for more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it'd be interesting to go. I thought I have to actually be back for work that night. So.
Yeah. it's a really enjoyable event. There's a lot of good news because it's all about celebrating
right.
great things that have happened in mm-hmm. preservation. So it's just kind of fun.
Like the Revitalize Washington Awards, you know,
yeah,
their
yeah.
ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have old business up next.
Sorry, oh. So people would let us know who wants to attend the May 22nd?
Yes, so we know who's coming.
Who's coming?
Check our schedules.
Hey,
yeah, mm-hmm. Let me know. It's work, in the middle of work, so.
I might be able to do that one. I can't do the May 15th, though.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look at my schedule.
Okay. And I asked it before, I wanted to say a big thank you to Holly, as she was, it was her idea to nominate you all and helped with the nomination with Sarah. So, kudos to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, old business. We've got the HPC appointment process.
I just want to give a heads up, right, Sharon, on where we
yes,
what
sorry,
the what process is. She's typing, so I'll start her.
For the appointment process?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we received 15 applications for the two vacancies. Rob Haney decided not to reply. Sean did. And the interviews will be completed by the end of April, and the recommendation will be forwarded to the Vancouver City Council. We'll then forward the recommendation to the Clark County Council. And Jan mentioned that Vancouver is not going to do interviews this year.
Since their recommendations were completely ignored last time.
So we'll have the two vacancies filled by mid-June, probably.
And county council may do interviews. They did last year, and they may interview you too. They,
okay.
They usually
yeah.
Do whoever they want to interview, and they'll have a list. So the point or the terms start in July, so we are in good terms of where we are on the calendar, so it gives us plenty of time. So that should happen by June. Okay.
The budget, 2018 budget.
So you have a budget in your packet. We just need a very quick discussion tonight, not a delayed one. There's two items that we need your approval for so we can move forward. One is the topography for the app and the web. We allocated $500 to give us 5 sites photographed. And if you approve that, we can get started.
Can we approve that without a quorum?
No.
You don't have to vote on this.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Just general nod.
Just nod your head.
And the other line item is we have 4 properties on the National Register that don't have plaques that would like them. It's Benford School, Campus Main Post Office, Vancouver Main Post Office, and Louisville Park. And we put it, it's $500.
A continuation of what?
Yeah, and those are publicly open. That's what our priority was.
Definitely for the plaque and the app.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yes, for the plaques. So
and photography. What's the Hillborn display case?
Well, that's the sole undecided. That was the one where you weren't here last month, but no. Robert had suggested potentially they have a built-in display case and curating photos with Clark. The WSUV to have like photos and sketches and drawings that can go for 6 months kind of surrounding the lecture. But
okay.
Robert went over there and we thought that's what he was asking, so we asked the museum to pitch. They didn't ask to do this.
Oh, okay.
And it's up in the air and it might just be reallocated. Maybe you want to do more photography later in the year. It's too early to really decide that right now.
So it's just a placeholder.
It's a placeholder at some point. In the summer, you need to decide what to do with
that money.
But for now, we just need the head nod for the plaques and the head nod for the photography.
Yeah.
There's consent.
Okay.
Consents.
And we have ordered the interpretive panel, just so you know. So that's been ordered for the farm cemetery and the plaque for the Zenner House. So now all this Heritage Register plaques will run through this project. So that will be a lot easier. And all memberships have been renewed.
Okay.
We don't have anybody. We're going to do the photo off. So.
Yeah.
Maybe we do that at the end if it's just the 3 of you, if you want to do that.
Who's taking these photos?
I'll take it.
What is it for?
So, Sean's going to the National Alliance for Preservation Commissions, and they sent out something that it's going to be part of like a slideshow. During the conference, and it might be cool since Sean's going to be there presenting to highlight, since you're at a historic site too, we can do it maybe outside.
Yeah, you can do that
before it gets too dark.
All right.
Is it time sensitive? Can we wait till next month when we might have more people?
It has to be in prior to the next meeting.
Okay.
Or you could skip it.
It was just an idea. I mean, it's up to you.
I'm fine either way.
I think since less than half of the commission is here, it would look silly to
submit
that.
Yeah.
Since we're all like staff, if we had everyone or something.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
The public who's here.
Rob. All right, we'll move on. Alex isn't here, so unless Sarah, are you and who's on the committee again?
Well, Rob, we met.
Did you all meet again after last
week? We haven't.
We haven't met again,
okay.
So.
He gave us an update, but I wasn't sure if you all made any more progress or had anything to make the report. Okay. That's all for the regular meeting.
All right.
Now for the part that scared away the other commissioners.
Let's do public comment.
Never be in the public.
Yes, well, my name is Robin Summers, and I have property that abuts the farm. We just got a lovely new fence, and most of my neighbors are happy with it. However, when they found, I think, two markers for graves when they went through all that, and I guess they're in a museum now, would it be nice to perhaps put something else back where those markers were taken from, so these people have some kind of acknowledgement that they're there?
I wish Alex was here, because he was the archaeologist. I don't think he thought that that's where our burial was, where they found it, I believe. I think he thought that it was not the location of where it was originally put.
Well, how can you tell? There's a huge area there.
That's why I wish he was here. That's what I just remember.
Could you mention that?
Yes, maybe of course. Yes.
Do something. You know, this little piece of concrete.
Yes.
With scratchings on it or something.
Yeah.
Would be nice.
We'll check in with him and see, and we'll have him report something at our next meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Did you have a comment?
No.
No, well, I just wanted to alert everybody that the State Historic Preservation Office has embarked on their twice-a-decade State Historic Preservation Plan. And very soon there'll be a survey going out with various questions on it about, you know, what kinds of buildings you think are important to pass on to future generations, etc. Anyway, when it's available, we'll be sure to send a link to Jackie, but we'd love to have everybody fill it out. There'll be some multiple choice questions. There's going to be some places where you can just write general comments, but it's a great way to have input on what planning they're going to do for the next 5 years. This is a requirement from the National Park Service, and so it eventually goes off the Park Service. It's not exactly a work plan for the state office, but it informs their work plan, as well as other organizations like the Washington Trust and organizations around the state. So all input will be welcome, so watch for an exciting survey in your inbox.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Has the historic cemeteries, I forget how you described it.
The grant.
Has...
There's information available on the Washington Trust website.
Okay.
And there's some workshops coming up for that, along with the Heritage Farm grants and all the different programs. Unfortunately, there isn't one in Vancouver this time, but I think the closest one might be Centralia, so it's not super far away.
Okay.
But those are going to be some great ones to be aware of. It seems to me that one of them, they were going to have some sort of Skype link or something, so it might be possible to do virtual attendance as well. But all the information is on the website. So.
Okay.
Wow.
That's impressive. Are we moving on?
Okay, now we get into the work, right? So I put together a little slide presentation just to kind of keep us on track and maybe do a more overview. So to kind of to get that on track from where we were last month, we're updating the historic preservation, the county's historic preservation code. Last month was kind of our first review at it, so Sharon and I had taken our first cut at it, presented it to you all. We had received some feedback before that meeting from some of you, and then we got some feedback at the meeting. So we, our next iteration that we sent out to you all last week, incorporated some of the edits or revisions that you suggested, and some of the things that we didn't suggest or that we didn't revise or edit, we have answers for that. So, but we want you to ask them to us instead of having to go through line by line. So, which we can if you want, after, why don't I go through this and kind of then we can figure out what best works for you. And I know that the last meeting there were some questions about the Clark County Cultural Resources Inventory. So I kind of wanted to do a broad overview of that just so that we're all on the same page of what that is and how it's used and how it can be used, or the kind of past inventories that have been done. So I'm gonna start with going there. So we're gonna do two things, quick overview of the inventory and then go through the changes to the code. So, from what I can gather from the 99 survey, the one before that was done in 1979, and it was countywide and included 129 entries of a wide variety of resources. In 99, 2000 was the next round, and they had found that by then about 200 had been inventory. So they had an additional, you know, sites had been inventory between 79 and 99 over that period. The 99-2000, and we have a resource here because Holly was part of that team, they did a windshield survey and developed a numerical ranking. So I've provided you all an example of one so you can kind of see what all that entailed. So they developed a methodology that if it was a score of 60 or over, and that it retained some of that architectural integrity and could be listed to the inventory. So during that survey, they had 208 new properties considered for listing, and doing the scoring, 133 were ranked high enough to be added. So that is kind of where that inventory got us from 99-2000. So, according to, there is a, if anyone's interested, I can provide this to you. This was their whole, historic,
hey.
Right, Holly?
I'm good.
Whole report about it, how what their methodology is, what they use, a lot of history of Clark County, and they had a recommendation for future surveys that their area should be focused on incorporating the center. Vancouver, I think there was the annexation was going on, so that was kind of left out, so that to be looked at again, and the town of Yancoalt. So as you can see, these are just kind of shots of the form. You see them better in your packet there. Pretty much, you know, basic information about the structures, statement of significance information and a description of the appearance, and you know it works to help people kind of get started on the nomination process if they want to do that. So there's some bibliographic references if it was available. So that was the inventory forms, or that's what they look like, and then of course the ranking sheets. So this one ranked pretty high, 93. The City Hall in Richfield. So that's pretty much for the inventory. So is there any questions about it that I can answer for you all before we go into the code? Because it is part, has pieces in the code, so I want to make sure I covered this.
So when it gets updated,
yeah,
revisit the sites that have already been visited, and then do at least to some extent? Or
I think it seemed like last time they did kind of take a look and see what was inventory, because many of them, or not many of them, but some of them had been demolished, so they wanted to update. They kept them on the inventory, but made note that, you know, these structures were no longer there, so.
And then basically just going and doing this process on the structures that were now old enough.
Right. Not working. It's a way of tracking and planning and knowing kind of where these resources are. We add them to our maps online, which is our GIS database, as well as the permitting. So it gives at least if a property owner comes in, has no idea, and they're coming in for a permit for something, they'll get a flag and they'll at least know that this is on the inventory, and then I can provide them, like, here's the program, here's some incentives you should look into maybe if you're interested in renovating your property. So it's a way to inform.
And would the survey instrument be updated before it was done?
I'm sure it could be.
Oh, the state office has a new system now.
Is it one that we're obligated to use, or?
I don't.
There's always benefit to using it, but.
Well, it all ties into the Wizard database, and so it's all tied to that. I can't say that you couldn't add some additional information if you wanted to, perhaps, but it wouldn't be recorded in Wizard. But that actually brings up a point, I don't know the answer to this. For example, the inventory forms that are in Wizard, that were not done, for example, as part of this effort, but were done as part of others, are those also part of the GIS level?
Good question. I don't know.
Well, because I'm thinking there were a bunch of studies done as for the Columbia River Crossing.
Yeah, yes.
Highway 99 was surveyed at some point. I just don't know whether those are in the county system. But there's a whole lot more in Wizard than are necessarily reflected in this print document, for example.
Right. So that's a good thing to kind of look into, because we're trying to get the cities. I'm working with Keith on getting some of the city work that was done into Maps Online. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that and historic districts that we have, because those weren't really delineated. So.
Where is
there's more actually.
Where is it found on Maps Online?
Because it's under parks layer.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Parks and Recreation, I think.
So this is
very
well, there's I think that goes back to some of the comments I've made about, making the rounds now to all the city staff about this about our program, because no one's gonna look there for that information. I use that every day.
I know.
I go to Wizard though, if I if I see if a property comes up and I have a well, that's kind of unique, and I'll go to the state site and find it right away, or not find it, or I'll even ask them.
Mm-hmm. We've met with someone from GIS today about a couple things, but I talked to them about the whole our Maps Online and Property Information Center, kind of raising the highlighting historic, whether it's on the register or not, on like that front page.
Yeah.
So even if you were just looking at a parcel, one of the attributes would be, is it on the register? Which one it is, or if it's on the inventory.
Yeah.
So it'd be on that first information
That'd
sheet.
Be great.
So I've asked, requested it. So hopefully they can make that work. I assume they can. It's just putting that on their working plan.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me it might actually require an action of the commission to adopt those other forms, if you're going to consider them part of the Clark County inventory.
Yeah.
Because it's a state form, but is it accepted by the county? It could mean something at some point, and something to consider as you go into this.
Right.
Like, are they automatically part of the county inventory if somebody fills out a form?
Right.
Well, and it's how to get that information to the maps.
That too, like who's responsible for talking to the GIS people and
coordinating all that.
Have the box ticked.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're working on it. It's on our radar, and we're trying to make that better. So more to come. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're kind of trying this slide deck on you all, because we have to give a overview to the county council in a couple weeks. They want to get a briefing before we get any further, just to kind of know what we're thinking about doing. So kind of giving a brief background, so 2009, we did some minor changes to the code. So that was the last time we really touched it, when it came over to Title 40. And those were very minor changes, like naming conventions, community development was the department at that time. Now it's under community planning. It was the Office of Archaeology, and now it's the Department of Archaeology. The state had changed their archaeologist definition, so we just revised that. And then the legal prosecuting attorney made some changes to the whole code, not just historic, about changing what body received appeals for decisions made by either staff or the land use hearing examiner, and as well as you also. It was going to the county commission at that time, and they revised that. So that's what happened in 09. So with a broad overview, this update includes updating the code references that are within there, either that it was pointing to code sections that had changed since then, so it wasn't pointing at anything that was relevant. Some RCWs and WACs have been revised. We naming conventions again, county council is no longer the board of county commissioners.
We fixed some review processes, names, things like that. Try to clarify gaps and inconsistencies with our existing processes so it's clear for applicants as well as staff as well as the commission on the steps you take. We added some definitions that we never had that are, I think, helpful for people to understand what some of these processes or terms mean. Then we looked at whether, you know, some of this code language, is it code language or is it information that should be in our rules and procedures? So looking at that, and then just some editorial changes like our certificate of appropriateness, we put it in caps so it's, you know, you can tell that's a process. So that's kind of a broad overview. So going through it, we section the first page there, applicability. This was, I think, Sean or Alex's suggestion, changing the term of historic property or properties to be, because it's more than, it's buildings, objects, sites, and structures, kind of being more specific about that. And the request was to, you know, to use that terminology through the rest of the code. And I just went through it again today, and I noticed that I didn't catch them all, but we will. So that's why this is in red, to make sure that I get them all. Another one, under applicability, terminology of eligible. So we have there that, you know, properties listed or eligible to be listed, changing that to under consideration. We don't know if they're eligible really, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so they're under consideration to be listed, so changing that.
Yes.
And then, as I said earlier, the updates to the definitions. So adding, moving some around. Some definitions were in code sections. So you have this big like paragraph of a definition under a section. We just moved everything under definitions so you knew where to find it. So the next section that we've done some revisions to are the HPC's rules and powers and duties, and that is on page 4 and 5. So we tried to include or clarify your duties. So we had some, but not all of them were in there. So we included the review nominations. We made some a little bit more clarification on your process or your review authority over our proposed changes to registered properties. We added some language in there that you your meetings and all that you do are under the OPMA, Open Public Meetings Act, so that's in there as well.
By the way, since you brought that up,
yes.
Have you guys all gone online and taken that training, the Open Public Meetings Act training?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone has, so I think we need to, we'll send it out again.
Yeah, I'm not sure that
okay. That
I have yet.
Yeah.
It's through the Attorney General's office, and it's online, and
all you have to watch video.
All you got to watch video, certify that you watched it.
You're supposed to do it within like 60 days or 90 days.
90 days.
Yeah.
It's okay. Look at
okay. Like, so you haven't.
We had sent it out in November, and the city that doesn't have records of it, so of people taking it, so I don't know, and we probably didn't follow up, so we'll just get on track now.
We have the system set up for our boards and commissions that when somebody takes it and pushes the button that says they certified they did it, that the staff person gets an email. But we didn't have the Historic Preservation Commission sent them because the county is really the administrator, so I don't think those, yes, I took it.
Yes. We'll follow. We'll get it caught up. Okay, so back to powers and duties. Another thing we added was a clarification of the rules of vote, that it's a majority vote, and that we also talked about eligibility. So if you weren't at the hearing, you weren't there for the discussion, you can't, if it was tabled to a following meeting, you shouldn't vote on it. And I think we discussed that last month. That's how we decided to go. Okay, moving on. The next couple sections that have some revisions are the National Register section, which has been deleted. It's referenced in your duties of things you do, but we no longer, or we're proposing that we take out the language requiring you to have a full-blown public hearing
for these reviews as a recommendation to the state's advisory council. It could be just, I think, at a regular meeting where you have a quorum, and I don't think we need to post it and notice the whole thing. So this was looking at other jurisdictions. They don't do that. So, I mean, it wasn't in the state's model code. So that's our proposal. For the Clark County Heritage Register, we added language to clarify the nomination process. So it gives kind of more steps, kind of this is what you do, these are the things you'll need to have in your application, just to help clarify that and make it helpful for people and the commission. We added language, or relocated language, on processes to occur after the nomination is approved. So we had a bunch of kind of code language, clarify as code, but under the zoning section, which you'll see a lot crossed out. So we're moving, some of those things are valid, they just don't belong there. So we're moving them in the sections, like once something's listed on the register, it should be added to the database, the permitting database, maps online, things like that, things that happen after listing. And then due to our experience in the fall with the removal processes, we clarified that so it's clear on, you know, that process of either a commission review or a property owner request for consideration to remove, and kind of the two-step process there. So you'll see that. Oh, and here we, on page six, we have a specific question for you that we wanted to ask about. On the Clark County Register criteria for eligibility on the bottom of page six, has B1B. So, criteria for determining eligibility for designation in the register. Any building, structure, site, object, or district may be designated for inclusion if it has integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and or association. So the National Register defines integrity as having all these seven qualities. That's how it says. So the question is, I think Sean had brought this up, because we have situations where we have listed properties or buildings that have been relocated. Do you want to do that same definition, or is it and or? Kind of situation, like can they have one, two, three, do they have to have them all? So I don't know, Sean, if you have any.
I think that the location thing is definitely something that should be in or, because we have a lot of those buildings that have been moved. Even tonight's, you know, if we were wanting to be strict, we'd be, well, this hen house is out.
The Slocum House.
It's been moved. Yeah. The Slocum House has been moved. Yeah. That library has been moved. We'd lose a lot of our history if we did that.
Yeah. And the National Register offers the ability for a criteria exception.
Okay.
So it's the same thing with the 50-year rule. If there's some exceptional reason why it should be listed as less than 50 years, it's the same thing with moving. If you make a case for why it still qualifies in other ways, the National Register allows that flexibility.
Sure. That might be the only way to save it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think something like that should be based on an exception. I think having clarity in the language that the integrity that matters is the integrity of the elements that are the basis for the designation. So whatever it is about that site, building, place that is supposedly significant, that needs to have integrity of, you know, and maybe not of all these things, but it has to have some kind of integrity. I think it needs to be a, you know, list of all ors.
That's what we put an and or, since the list. There can be some or.
Does that work?
The and or.
Will everyone read it that way? That they're all ors, or just the last two are ors?
Well, that's usually what the and slash or would mean, that you could have all of them or one of them.
We could put ors between each word.
It is a kind of a structural problem in the
I mean, you could. Some people hate the and slash or, and that's what you're saying. You don't like that and slash or in general.
Well, no, I don't know that people. Well, I don't know that people will read it the way that it's intended. If you only have it at the end,
you can get rid of the and an or at the end. Mm-hmm.
And
would tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my boss is one of those that hates the and slash or and has removed it significantly from our code. So okay. It's one of those things.
Well, when you think about it, the and is redundant if you have an or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm more, I guess, lenient on the language. I think I stay, but...
So, well, could you just make that change? Thank you.
And I think there might need to be just a little bit more massaging of A with the definition of significance. I'm not sure that they completely align yet.
Okay.
Because the definition of significance talks about national significance, and A still talks about the community specific.
Is this local, state, or national significance in the definition?
Right, but the criteria in A refer specifically to the community. So one seems broader than the other.
Will you email me maybe something like a suggestion of maybe how we could
sure.
do something different?
Add it to do.
You could use the word primarily. You could use a synonym for significantly if we think that significantly.
It's confusing, primarily. Or
something along.
You could probably take significantly.
Well, you don't want to, because I think the point is to say that it has some, you know, majority or, you know, to a great extent it's associated with. Yeah, you wouldn't want a minor association, I guess. You wouldn't want the opposite of it. You want
strongly.
Primarily strongly.
You could say to the greatest extent or to a great extent. You could maybe.
I like it primarily.
Or primarily associated with.
Not to backtrack to B again, but did we decide to just have and?
No, just or. Have or.
Just have or. Okay. So. Back on that clerical issue, that could be read to pick any one of those seven, mm-hmm. and just that one. Is that our intent?
To only pick one?
Yeah.
No.
So codes can't have intent, is what our prosecutor says. You have to say what you want, code, and so if it's not clear, we need to maybe add in parentheses.
Yeah. Yeah, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. Not the intent of the code, but our intent and what this line should be.
It's the same thing. Like maybe we should add parenthetical to say what you just said. It could be one or some, so that people don't have to be confused. We should be clear in here. Because
do we know whether, if we had a nomination come before us and the only redeeming value it had was its location. So.
Well, I think the whole section then has a problem because usually like A, B, or C, they, if you wanted it to have A, B, and C, then after at the end of A it would say and B would at the end of B would be and then C would end it. So you know that you needed to have something from each one of those three categories.
So we do need an and after B then?
I'd say you need an and after all of them, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And, you know, I think that the original language has just an issue in how it deals with significance, and I think that moving it to a definition helps. But really what A is getting at is that it is historically significant. So I think maybe reworking it to be less specific and letting the definition do the heavy lifting. So it is historically significant. And you go to the definition. Oh. What is significant? Oh, this is what significant is.
That's a good word.
That might not be bad.
That's true. You could do it that way.
Because right now, there's nothing...
Otherwise, we're redefining significant.
Yeah, and that was the issue that I had, is kind of what that A is getting at is just a little bit different than what the definition is getting at.
That's where the definition used to be, and we moved it.
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Okay, so A could be, it is historically significant, and then you go to the definition and see what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And then and B, and you can pick some of those elements, mm-hmm. and C, and one of nine other categories.
Right, oh yeah, you have to have an and there, you have to have an and.
And C. Yeah. And this or anything else.
And properties must meet the above as well as fall into at least one of the following categories.
With the ands after the ABC, is the beast clear yet or not? Is it still confusing? Rock could ask, like,
well,
is it still confusing?
You know, as long as a property doesn't have to meet all seven of those.
No,
it doesn't
some.
Have to
meet. Apologies, or some, you know, we don't, maybe that's where there's, you know,
I would read this.
Judicial decision, you know, our ability to judge as a board, whether it's
with the ands, I would read this as it's you know, if we change that to it's historically significant, so it's historically significant and it has integrity of materials, let's say, and it's at least 50 years old.
Yeah,
that could make it,
right,
you know, put it in the realm of let's consider it, right?
Yeah, I think you just put the and after the semicolon. I'm trying to think of how.
Yeah.
This is not a new code situation. I'm pretty sure that's how other code lists work.
Yeah. Yes.
But just, I want to make sure I'm it has what you had said. It has integrity of location, design, setting, materials, location, feeling, or association. Is that going to be clear to some other people 10 years from now that they can pick and choose as many as they want? Or,
well, I work with codes every day, so I read it as that's being very clear.
Okay. It can be any one of those combinations.
I mean, you could put before the and. Well, before the semicolon, you could say, I don't know, I'm wondering if you put anything in there, it would be more confusing. I don't personally know if you could do
that. So we've got the and linking and between A and B and C, so it's the one and the next, and then we've got the or at the end of B, so that you can pick any one of those seven location, design, setting, materials, relationship.
No, you always, after each one of these semicolons, you have an and.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Sorry, and.
Oh, okay.
It's and, A and B and C.
One
B alone, it's or.
Or.
No.
One thing that might.
Or.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. We're on the same page.
We're saying the same thing. Yeah.
One thing that might help is actually to move C to A. Because. Yeah,
and
make
do this first, right?
Yeah, well, and that also puts it in order of increasing restrictiveness. You know,
okay.
You start, is it 50 years old?
Okay.
Then is it historically significant?
Okay.
Then does it have integrity? And so it's in a logical order, and then you don't have to worry about going from an and to an or back to an and. Just in case that confuses somebody. Because it could.
True.
Okay. We're trying to be very clear for the record.
Uh-huh.
If anybody listens to this record, they know.
And I do like shifting C to B A just because it's a bit more, you know, broad.
Mm-hmm.
It is where we start, actually.
Yeah, it is where you start.
They're old buildings, right? Mm-hmm. Or properties, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, it's because at the museum when I gave my that little intro about us. I asked everyone if how many people in the room had buildings, you know, or homes that were over 50 years old. So I started with that question for
mm-hmm.
everyone as well. So, yeah.
First question.
Okay, that's good.
All right, thank you. Everyone comfortable with that then?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, so the next the next kind of area I wanted to highlight and I want you all to make sure you go through these, and you know, if there's stuff that you see, you're asked now or get back to us, and we're going to tell you what your deadline is, but I just want to make that clear. So, certificate of appropriateness procedure, which...
Page 10, is that right?
Yes.
Did I miss something?
Number 13.
I'm sorry. There, I should have also gone over page 7 and 8, the nominating procedures. We added a bunch of things here. It's kind of what I went over at the beginning. It's more just steps on the process and the things that is required for a nomination, not how to write it, but more the documents or the background information, what your application packet is going to have, and kind of the roles of staff and how we work with applicants on getting that together. So that's new to the code. kind of that stuff was in the rules and procedure and is on the application, but it never really was.
I thought that was in your last draft, because I mean,
it was.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going over everything kind of.
Oh,
again.
Okay.
Okay, so certificate of appropriateness. Okay, so let's see. Major changes here. Deleting unnecessary code language to potentially move to rules and procedures document. So things that we felt were necessarily code language could be moved. Including language regarding the emergency repairs, demolition stuff. So that is new from last month. And that is on, where do we put the, page 12 at the top. So make sure you take a look at that.
That's from the Oregon Model Code, Washington Model Code, just that one thing.
So then also with the Certificate of Appropriateness, we changed the naming convention of review processes. So we got rid of the type 1 and the type 3. To call them what they are, which is type 1s are staff reviews and type 3s are HPC reviews. And we included in some language about what you would do as an applicant if I or Sharon did a staff review. What's your recourse if you don't like what we said? It was kind of silent on that. So we included some language as to what you could do to appeal our decision and that. The timelines and process for that. And then what we also did is in a couple different sections, breaking up very long paragraphs of code language to subsections so it was easier to read.
Jackie.
Yes, ma'am.
Who has the power to decree that something needs to be demolished due to public safety?
The building official.
Okay.
But there, he has some language in there that he would, there's kind of a work with the commission on it.
Oh, good.
Notify us.
Thanks. I just, you know, a lot of things came down after Katrina that didn't necessarily need to be taken down. It's just something to watch for in case of disasters. Yeah.
They have to support, they have to provide sufficient evidence supporting their conclusions and provide that to the Star Commission in 15 days.
And we checked in with our building official to make sure that he was okay and understood that.
So when the big earthquake happens, just be sure to plan a meeting real soon after that.
Yes.
So,
it doesn't have any recourse for the commission. It's just an information. You don't actually, it doesn't, we didn't have a process in here that you couldn't appeal that.
Well, conceivably, if it's actually an emergency within 15 days, it's
right.
Probably already happened.
Yeah. It's a hazard.
Yeah.
But you were saying that there was some that...
There'd be different, you know, you can't get every building rehabilitated immediately after a major disaster.
Yeah.
And if you think about things that, you know, theoretically, if the hidden house fell down in an earthquake, it could be reconstructed. But would it be considered a public hazard if the roof fell in or whatever? So it could be subject to demolition without there being enough opportunity for somebody to be able to repair it and rehabilitate it.
So it's information only, what would happen? They don't have any recourse the way it's written.
Yeah. And there's, if it truly is a life safety matter, then there's really no recourse that can be. I don't think it's responsible, you know, speaking as a hardcore preservationist, I don't think it's responsible to have any kind of administrative process. The only thing that you might add is language to specify that, you know, it can only be demolished if demolition is the only remedy, you know, and it can't be relocated or altered. It can only be relocated if alteration, if, you know, to limit, because sometimes they'll say, you know, oh, there's a life safety issue, and they demolish it when they could have fixed it. Because that has happened with sites. So some additional language around that, that, you know, the...
You want to impose that?
Well, I would just
add it to my list.
I was wondering, like with Katrina, even if you took down the hazard, you know, situation, if they didn't truck it away, you know, is there, to me, if there was that delay, like, you could abate that immediate hazard.
There's just,
but maybe
people have different opinions on what can be saved and what can't be. People will make claims all the time that something has to be demolished because it's a life safety hazard. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, for example, Columbia River Crossing, many people say that that bridge should be replaced. Well, mm-hmm. currently it's still there. So it's not always necessarily an existing public hazard. People just say that all the time. They go get their demolition permit and say, oh, this building is deteriorated, I need to take it down. Mm-hmm. And so it's just something to be aware of, that there are different opinions as to whether something can be saved or not. And okay, yes, if we have the major earthquake, people's opinions are going to change about what's really, really important. But to have enough leeway so that when things settle down again, could something be salvaged?
If there was an example, not an earthquake, because that would be massive, but like a tree falling on something, what about salvage language instead of just demolishing
that's
it?
That's where I was going with this. If there's some.
Because you could probably get a lot out of it without just demolishing the whole thing. You know.
But what if this is a situation where, like, this thing's coming down, and, like, if the building official doesn't act quick, then, I mean, that's a lot of, you gotta get someone salvage.
Right. You know, the company that's gonna do the demolition, they can sell. It's the same company. They can just take it down in a way that salvages stuff, or you can crush it.
That's the part it might be more, since I'm unaware if that's even a possibility, but I'm wondering if that is a possibility.
Well, when we're looking at the Agard house, I had a call, a couple people who demolished it, and they said, yes, we can salvage or you demolish it, whatever you want. We can go in and get your fireplaces, railings out, and then take the thing down.
Mm-hmm. How do you put that in a code as to be uniform for every situation?
Consideration should be given to salvaging.
Well, it's funny you bring up the tree thing, because I'm always working on tree things in Camas, it seems, but they always say there's the second storm that takes down more trees than the first storm, and the second storm is all the people that are scared of the trees coming down after the big storm.
Yeah.
So they all take down their big trees, mm-hmm. when really things like a limb, you know, could be removed.
Yeah.
That the limb is really the hazard versus the entire tree.
Right.
You know, there's things that, smaller actions that can happen. If they're concerned that the house, you know, it's standing and they don't want people entering the premises, they don't want this thing collapsing or whatever it is, but it makes you wonder if there's some way we would have more time to take action once they've taken things down before they actually haul things away, that there could be some salvage.
I think the language can be, I think it can be written. I think it might take a little bit of thought, but you know, and I think that there are two fundamental things. One is that the intervention, whatever it is only as serious as is necessary to address the life safety issue. And then the other is that provisions for salvage. And, you know, it could be as simple as where salvage is possible without, you know, exacerbating the life safety issue, or, you know, however you put it, then it shall be done. And when demolition is necessary, it shall be demolished in a way that permits salvage of material after the life safety issue has been addressed.
Is it against the law to dumpster dive here? I'm saying this in that I just remember when I was in Philadelphia, they actually had a law against people going to construction sites and dumpster diving for historic things, you know, because that was such a big thing. And so they had a law.
Yet another law that I broke in Philadelphia.
Yeah. So, but I've never, you know, heard of it being an issue here. I'm just, yeah, maybe we bring that one back. Or you have a deadline.
Yep. It's coming to hearing for you next month.
So we need your comments by April 10th.
Yeah. My only caution about this and starting to define, you know, what actions a contractor owner need to take specifically as far as salvaging.
Yeah.
That's kind of drifting into the weeds, maybe a little deeper than what, as you were saying,
yeah.
The intent of the law is.
Mm-hmm.
That we're trying to prevent, our comments on it, where we're trying to prevent abuse of this power, because the building official has power, and how can we somehow insert ourselves in some way to prevent abuse of that power, that's a tough one. Mm-hmm.
I think providing opportunities. I think, you know, limiting the intervention to what is necessary to address this emergency life safety issue, and then providing opportunities for amelioration as possible. I don't think that's too far in the weeds, but I think you're right. I think that we don't want to all of a sudden create, you know, a demolition ordinance with a couple of sections.
But if you said something like, showing that provisions for salvage where possible shall be done, and link that to the building official. What's where possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not possible, then you have, it's just...
Yeah, because I don't think we want to require salvage, because we don't require that of other demolished properties, historic properties, but I think requiring the possibility of salvage, you know...
That's kind of what they did with the railroad bridge. Well, it is what they did with the railroad bridge. They offered, they actually had a long process of having to list it in newspapers for like 45 days or something like that before they could actually demolish the bridge. So I know that there's definitely examples out there to provide people opportunities.
You can run that through the building official too. He already looked at it and was okay with it. You know, just ask if salvage where possible is...
There was a case that came up a number of years ago in front of the commission about the trees on Officers Row, and they had, the city had had all of them evaluated by an arborist, and the arborist said, this one's got to go, and this one's got to go, and this one's got to go. And there really wasn't any recourse in that instance except to take them down, because once they've been identified as being a hazard, then the city is liable if that, you're walking into the tree and the limb falls off at that exact moment. And there were some reasonable things that happened at the time in terms of planting new trees and that kind of thing. But there are those instances that come up where, you know, once you say it's a hazard and then somebody gets whacked, then, you know, legal city. So, yeah.
Who would do the salvage? That's the other problem.
I think just providing making sure that they don't eliminate the opportunity for it to happen through their process.
Remind them.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so had that language, we changed the naming convention for the processes, we included the field process for staff review, broke up law paragraphs. I had a question for Alex, so I'll get back with him. And it had to do with on page 14 under commission review, we have in there alterations in appearance, replacement of storage material, new construction. So it's all the things that you guys review, or any excavation on an archaeological site. We've never done anything like that, so I was trying to.
I've been invited to go out to the site sometimes when we've done. Is that normal? Or just because I'm staff?
Well, I'm just wondering if, I mean, we have, because. I know there's this like fine line, right, with knowing where an archaeological site is. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are kept confidential. So, and we don't have any on our on our local register. So that's where I kind of got like, where would this ever?
And we couldn't have a public meeting out there. So we
And so I kind of wanted to ask him, like, would a site be listed on our local register? I mean, we have the Parkersville, which is a National Register Archaeological Historic District, but I think it's rare.
Maybe it's an archaeological district rather than a site.
So I think that, I need to get some clarity on that one. So next, when you guys get your hearing packets, you'll see what Alex has suggested.
The excavation may just be in the wrong place. Because it might be the excavation needs to be up with the activities. So for any register, you know, so that if there's going to be excavation, then it can't be a staff review. It has to go to the commission.
Right.
And then those issues can be addressed.
Well, it's under the commission review, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Because that seems to be what it's getting at, is if there could be an archaeological issue, that needs to go before the commission and not just the staff.
Right. Okay.
So if you just move excavation up to the activity, new construction or additions, alterations, or excavations, then you can just eliminate that phrase.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But that means that anytime someone does an excavation on any of our properties,
yeah.
It would come
to... That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like that's when, you have a known archaeological site, which I just don't see us having it on the register. So that's why I kind of want to ask Alex whether or not this...
Well, then it may just be a matter of getting that term right. If you're leveraging some other definition of archaeological site...
Development on an archaeological site. Just development. Yeah. Any development.
Yeah.
Like what they're doing at the Parkersville. Yeah. That's where what we don't need to necessarily know where the sites are to.
That's a good point.
That's
good. Yeah. Okay. So that's pretty much, we've got some questions for legal also in here on timelines and things like that.
One of my comments on the days, I think anything that's public facing, making the day count the same if possible, would probably be good.
Yeah.
It just helps with usability. You have so many days to appeal.
Yeah.
No matter what you're appealing.
Yeah. I agree. Right now there are a bunch of different ones. Mm-hmm. They're confusing. Okay. The next major section that we changed was, like I said before, there was only an appeal section under the waiver of certificate of appropriateness for some reason. So there was no appeals process that was clear for any of your other processes. So we've proposed just a plain old section for appeals. So any decision that you all make, and it's mostly for dominations and certificate of appropriatenesses, can be appealed, and this is the process that you take. And that's another question for our legal, just to verify that that's how she wants it, and that's proper.
Yeah, because would that apply to budget votes?
And yeah.
Okay. As long as legal says so.
It says that's a good question. So I don't know if we need to be very clear, but I think it has to be whatever's in this code, right? Mm-hmm. Under your review process.
Well, if it's a problem, you just put a list of the things that can be appealed.
Yes, yeah. And it's pretty much those two things, because there's another process for special evaluation that's separate.
So it'd be certificate appropriateness and nominations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the process and timelines for that appeal, we didn't have before. And then the section on zoning. So you got H1, A through E, we didn't think had anything to do with zoning. But they were important things that are part of a process of different types of reviews or different types of listing, most of them having to do with the inventory. So we have fixed that and moved some of that language to the inventory section.
So H1, is it? So there's nothing that follows H1?
No, it's just, not. Yeah.
You
don't have a two or three year.
They're misplaced, so we're crossing them out.
But yeah, she said nothing under one.
Oh,
so,
nothing under one.
So maybe there's no one.
Oh, just make it a section so they have a number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But actually, but Chris likes to have everything numbered, so you can say H1.
That's going to go away from the formula. A little
bit. Yeah, I think so too. If there's no two or three,
well,
okay. But I'll leave it to Chris. It looks.
And
I think you can just put a colon, right? You just put a colon and then you put the.
Oh, so
then
you just change the sound thing.
Yeah. Appeals directly above that. It's G appeals.
Oh, right.
And that's it.
Oh, that's it too on appeals.
So
you get a one.
If you change H1, we probably need to keep going.
It's probably the whole code, and I never noticed until now. Never mind. Don't worry.
I'm sure we'll get some feedback on that. Okay, so special evaluation, the change we made, we moved the definition that was in that first paragraph under I to the definition section at the beginning of the code. I had proposed, I think last month I told you I was going to delete the fee requirement, and I don't know if I could do that at this time, so that might be staying. It's not a big fee. so it's
$300.
$303. Okay. So that's probably going to stay. Updating the appeal process specific to special valuation. So we just looked at what the model code for the state had, the DAP has, and updated how they set it. So you'll see that under on page.
Is this really different from the other appeals process? Does it have to be separate?
There's something about the board of equalization in there.
Oh, okay.
The assessment. So it's kind of a dual, I guess, process. Superior court. And
for special valuation, I was just thinking, hearings examiner. Can't any of these go to the hearings examiner instead of superior court?
I think because you guys are also, you are a quasi-judicial function, and so are they.
Oh.
So you would need to, the decision goes to the Hudex higher level.
Okay, I get it.
If you are a recommending body.
Just feel like special valuation isn't as, you know, heavy of a
thing to go to superior
court for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so that's that. We do have a question for you on page 18. Sorry, go back to right after the section. Under little s, we have, and this has to do with if a property that's on a special valuation, if you're granted a special evaluation, and you want to disqualify it for a certain reason, we have in there, in a matter consistent with its rules and procedures, we don't have anything in the rules and procedures on what that, you know, it would include. So do you want to add something to the rules and procedures is the question, or put something in the code that clarifies what that is? Are you going to hearing, you know, or what?
So you're suggesting we could just strike that language altogether and just say the commission determines whether or not properties are disqualified because of, and then you say those two reasons.
Well, I mean, it probably would be, I mean, looking at it, it's like, what, so when do you do that? Do you have a hearing?
How would that happen?
How would that happen?
Doesn't seem like that's something that can be entirely defined in the rules and procedures.
Yeah.
It sounds like it needs to mirror the removal from the Heritage Registry
kind of that
structure.
Initial meeting, potential hearing.
Yeah, and you could probably just adapt almost the exact same language.
Okay.
And then that also helps with that whole consistency. You know, the public can expect, you know, a similar
same
process.
That's a good idea. Does that make sense to you guys?
I think so.
It does. And G speaks to that too, as to what. I mean, G is the procedure right below
not
it.
The decision,
no, G is after they've been disqualified. That's the notification procedure.
Stating the facts supporting its findings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
But there is the how did we generate our findings?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll put that in. The next kind of sections are the interlocal agreement at the end here, so that starts on page 20. So here, my point was to update the language. So we struck out the interlocal agreement must specify if the commission and Clark County Land Use Hearing Examiner retain final decision making nominations. So the Land Use Hearing Examiner, that's wrong. That's not correct anyway. But all these interlocal agreements are already established, and it already determines who the final review authorities are, and it's always City Council. So I kind of made it more generic as to that it has to say in the interlocal agreement who the final decision makers. To kind of get rid of that extra legal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What do y'all think about that?
Looks good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The last part is the cultural resources inventory. So we changed moved the definition to the definition section, and then kind of just streamlined the language from things we, you know, maybe was repeating or that was pretty much all we did there.
Yeah.
And then we added a section on
3B.
3B on making sure that these sites that are listed in the inventory are added to the permitting database and maps online, just as a make sure we cover that.
But is that regulatory? Is that a regulatory requirement, or do regulatory requirements only apply to the public and not to?
They apply to us too.
So
we're supposed to follow these rules.
So if we say that properties listed on the inventory shall be indicated, then that seems like that's a regulatory requirement.
Well, it's kind of, and the commission doesn't really, you don't approve these inventory listings, at least not, that's not how it's been. It's like if it met the criteria, it's put on the list, it's added to, you know, the database as a information tool. So it's almost like a staff requirement to make sure that, you know, it is done when that process has happened.
And the only concern of the commission might be how is it funded and how does it actually happen, or?
But, so
it's the staff process, pretty much.
I think then what the new one under K is getting at is that there's no regulatory requirement for property owners. And
yes,
so maybe we should just be explicit about that, because it does seem like there's a regulatory requirement for...
For property owners.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie, yes, a point of possible clarification. My recollection from when the inventory was done last time, that there was a vote on the part of the commission to adopt those properties that were recommended for the inventory.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why I was bringing up earlier the thing, like all these other inventory forms that have been filled out for various projects. Are they on the Clark County inventory? Are they merely inventory forms that exist?
I think...
So...
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea for us to kind of... put the stamp, this is the inventory, it's done,
yeah.
Especially since there's a requirement for the database, you know, to that, this is the one that we are saying is the inventory, so this is the one that the requirement is attached to.
I don't have the legal knowledge to know if that was required, but I believe that occurred at the time.
So there were rankings done? Who did the rankings? Was it the commission, or was it just a subcommittee, and then it went to the board?
There was a group of consultants. The recommendation was made to the commission. The commission voted to accept the recommendations, and therefore those things were added to the inventory. Whether that was necessary, I don't know.
We're not approving these properties to be designated.
There's
a difference.
There's no regulatory
the inventory.
Requirement.
I wouldn't want to limit the information.
These are initial surveys too. They're not. Nominations.
I mean, right now it says reviewed by the community planning department, so it's like a staff. Like, if it's, you know, meets the criteria and it's got the 60 plus, then it's on the inventory,
right.
And people now know it could be eligible.
And that can all be in rules and procedures. My only concern here is that this information may not make it into the database unless, you know, if because there's pushback from somewhere in the bureaucracy, unless the requirement specifically says it'll be put, you know.
That's why it needs to be here.
Right.
If not, and, there's
right. And so I don't know that you can really have a requirement like that unless the commission says this is the inventory that requirement applies to.
So we don't really interact with the inventory.
Well, all we would have to do is vote to accept it, however it was created.
We could put that in the rules and procedures, not in the process.
Yeah, of how we
yeah,
go about it. Maybe that's the right spot.
If it's codified, I think it needs to be nothing more than the inventory shall be voted upon by the commission. No detail besides that.
Yeah, the rules and procedures is just operating procedures, like the order of the agenda, that could go in rules and procedures.
I mean, this is a big step, actually, to have this in code. So... let's not minimize the fact that it might take some time to be implemented by this county. The fact that it's there is a step, and they still have to adopt it.
It's already what the county does.
Well, that's the problem. They really don't. That's why.
So
you said it's under the first layer.
So we had similar language already under the zoning section.
Yeah.
So it's been in there.
Yeah.
We just moved it. And it wasn't as specific. We made it more specific.
It's very clear when you tell them how it's designated. Yeah. I think it.
When you click on a property data sheet, that's where it says inventory. You don't have to go on the layers too. If you're looking for your property address, you want to see. Let's say you're I say IMB.
What do you mean on maps on property?
Yeah. It's not only in the parks there, but it's also it's on that data sheet.
Maybe you guys will have to show us because I'm on there every day and I don't see it.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's
I'm gonna have to go search.
It's on Maps Online, so if you pull up that layer, you'll see all the triangles. Those are all inventory properties, and if you click on it, it gives you some data that really you need to come to us to get that sheet.
Yeah.
But we're working on trying to fix that.
But could a link be put into Wizard because they've scanned those sheets?
A link
from the county website to Wizard.
Yeah.
I mean, then they would have to physically come get the sheets.
Right, yeah, that's what we're trying to do, get that so it's more readily available for the public. Mm-hmm. What do y'all think?
It's good work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the next step is that you need to have a hearing to, recommendation to move forward to the county council goes to the planning commission first. So for noticing requirements for your hearing, we'd like your any other revisions or comments or questions to us by next Tuesday,
okay.
If possible, so that we can get a package up and ready for hearing.
It goes to the planning commission and then the county council.
Did you want any formal comments from us? And that, as a commission?
For at this point?
Well, before you go to the planning commission.
Well, you're going to have a hearing.
Oh, we're going to have a hearing on this. Oh,
so you're going to have an official recommendation. This is coming from you.
Is that normal?
That, which part?
Having a hearing on the code in front of us.
We talked to Chris Legal about it. Do you think that's the best way to move forward a recommendation on code legal from you? We don't have anything in code that says you have to do, this way. But as a review body and as code language, it at least gives them the opportunity for any feedback or public comment as it kind of moves forward.
As a subject matter expert, didn't think that would be a normal process for code updates. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do we have anything else on our agenda tonight?
So I had one thing with the special valuation. There we go. So I have a philosophical, and that's that. So only properties that are on the Clark County Heritage Register have any obligation to preserve. And so I wonder if the special valuation tax credit should only be connected to the properties that actually have the obligation to preserve. I generally think that preservation benefits should only go with preservation obligations, but that is my philosophy and it is not shared by everyone. So I thought that I would just bring that up as to whether that is something that should even be considered.
Yes, I thought about that too. And the only, good thing about the special valuation program, if it's on the National Register, the property owner has to sign this kind of contract with the county.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have it. You will maintain.
Yes.
We're supposed to monitor them and make sure, at least for the 10 years. So
mm-hmm.
At least it does have that. I just wanted to.
Well, and I think that that's good because we do have properties that have obviously specifically stayed off of the local register to avoid regulatory oversight. And so that at least gives partial regulatory oversight to those properties if they go through special valuation. So even within my philosophy, that's an argument to keep it that way. But I just wanted to bring it up and see if anyone else had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. I suppose the only advantage would be extending that obligation beyond a 10-year period. But, the program does apply and enforce obligations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is a penalty if you don't meet those obligations.
Right, within at least those 10 years. And that's something.
Yeah. It's something.
Noted.
Okay, that's all I have. Oh, we did, Sean, we wanted to add, we were going to ask Robert too, since you guys are presenting in the next few months. And I saw that program came out, so I saw your
name and lights.
Would you be willing to kind of give us kind of an overview of what you're either planning to do or after you do it, just to kind of.
In May, if not.
Yeah, yes, no. At one of the next meeting or so, just to kind of share which one.
How it went.
Yeah, share what you're planning to do.
I can either ahead of time, it's unclear whether we will do presentations or if it's going to be just a discussion.
Panel or something.
If it's a presentation, I would be happy to give it either before or half afterwards. And then we also have the Washington one, which we know will be a presentation. So, you know, we could just do it once. Because I'll be building off of theirs, although I don't know that I would. Since I don't know the format, I don't know if it's going to be the same.
Sure. And Robert did want me to tell you guys that you are part of the. Are you going? No.
No, I withdrew.
Sarah, no, you're not going.
No.
Oh, are you going? Nope,
it's Alex and Mark.
Okay, he wanted me to relay that he's going to get in touch with them.
Revitalize Washington conference.
Yeah,
I'll be in New Orleans for the National APA conference, and I actually am hoping I can get on one of. There is a session that's with their Historic Preservation Commission, and so you have to see if I can actually get on it because it'd be really fascinating. So maybe I can report back on that if I get to do that.
Is that everything?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we need a motion to adjourn.
Can we do that? We don't have a quorum.
No, we just leave. We just all are out of here.
That's the problem. We can't leave.
We can't leave. We better call a friend.
Alex, we need you to come. Move to adjourn.
Please release me.
I'd say that
Robert on the phone. In the world is more important, Robert? Three of them.
Isn't he? I think Robert is out of town.
Mark and Lee. Oh, it wouldn't be interchangeably in something like
both. Meaning?
Yeah.
I think Alex might have said that he was going to be. I thought he mentioned something last time.
Okay.
Yeah. So.